Money and markets. The US dollar index now down a little bit more. It's down 8.24% for the year. Fixed income, the long treasury ETF up 7.53%. The intermediate 2.7%, the bond aggregate 3.2%, and junk still holding in there at 5.8%. It's backed off a little bit. Equities, the S&P still chugging along up at 17.35% this year. The home builders still outperforming the S&P at 23.19%. The European ETF 23.23%. Germany 26.6%. Developed markets minus North America 21.75%. Large cap, China 35.2%. Small cap 35.5%, emerging markets 33.7%. So everybody's outperforming the United States, the S&P, and that's not surprising since the US has so outperformed since 2009. Commodities down to now down, the commodity index now down 2.2% for the year. Gold up 10.76%, silver up 6.68%, still holding despite all the different pressures coming from money sucking away into the Bitcoin up. And then oil down 7.42% for the year. It got up as high as down 2% for the year, but is now dropping back down. Well, the House passed the tax package today. That's a huge political success for Speaker Ryan. He said he wanted to have it done by the 28th, and he got it done by the 16th, which is quite aggressive. He badly needed a success after a very long, arduous year with Obamacare and a variety of other setbacks and very bad wrangling politically between the Congress and Trump. And not Trump's not a leader who helps to build coalitions, although he seems to be getting a little bit better at it. Anyway, so the bill is through the House, and we can see what it looks like now. It goes to the Senate, and the Senate is a whole different story and has in fact been working aggressively on it. Part of it was Corker, who's one of the deficit hawks, agreeing to a tax cutting package over the 10 years, and that creates sort of an envelope to fit tax reform in, which makes it much easier for something to happen. The Treasury is saying that the package is revenue neutral, but other experts are saying it will add to the deficit. And the deficit hawks in the Senate, who are Republican, are being surprisingly quiet. I would point out that Rand Paul was attacked by his neighbor, very suspicious as far as I'm concerned. That may have something to do with the quietude. Paul submitted an amendment today to repeal the Obamacare mandate, which will make things easier for the package in terms of the deficit, but it also means a lot of people are going to end up without health care. Now, many of them would prefer to end up without health care rather than be part of the mandate. So it's got an interesting complexity around that one issue. Part of the problem is that if the package does start to result in increased deficits, it can trigger different pay-as-you-go rules, which will force cuts in spending, including in things like Medicare, which the president has promised he wouldn't be doing. And so it's just a reminder. I've done an interview, which we'll publish in the last week of the month, with Joe Klein about the coming perfect storm in healthcare. There's a real inability of the system to handle the capacity needed, including the economics of it, which is why the kind of cuts that could happen in Medicare, if the deficit balloons, could be pretty significant in terms of impact. Both the House and the Senate bill are centered around a corporate tax cut from 35 to 20%, which would be permanent. But there are a lot of issues now around the corporate rate, which I'll discuss in a second. Some of the most contentious issues are the repeal of state and local tax deductions, that's going to hit the states with high income taxes very hard, New York, New Jersey, and California. So they're still wrangling about that. They have kept the deduction for property tax deductions capped at 10,000 to try and win over the New York and New Jersey Republicans. But there's, you can see there's, this is much more pitched to the heartland. There's also caps on the mortgage deduction for houses up to or after $500,000. So expect the local tax deduction, state and local tax deduction, the mortgage deduction, and the property tax deduction to be all part of the wrangling that's going to happen before the tax bill can pass the Senate. Another issue which is very interesting, and I'm surprised to see it happening, is the GOP senators are backing a Republican House proposal to impose a 1.4% excise tax on investment income at private schools with endowments worth at least $250,000 per full-time student. This would hit Harvard University very hard. I can't imagine an institution that deserves it more. There was a Wall Street Journal editorial by two very clever finance professors from University of Washington this week that basically, or last week, describing Harvard University as a hedge fund with a university. In fact, it's true. Harvard Corporation is a corporation with an endowment, and operations in the university is simply a small part of it, and it's all designed to make the investment syndicate go. It's a way of managing intergenerational capital without having to pay taxes. And I assure you, the amount they send over to the university is significantly less than the amount of taxes they would have to pay if they were taxable. And I assure you, if you look at the way they're run, if there's anybody who produces a negative return on investment to the US government, it's the operations of the Harvard Endowment. I've read a lot about that. So it's interesting to see them, even in a tiny way, starting to be called out. So that's one of the things that will be debated. I think one thing much more scarier than to me is the House bill is proposing to cancel the deductibility of student loan interest. And if you look at anybody who's gotten a big student loan and then has gone to places like New York, New Jersey, or California to work in a high income state to be able to pay off their debt, they're now going to not be able to deduct their state and local taxes, and they're not going to be able to deduct their student loan interest. I'm not sure how that works. It seems like another attack on the most important group of people we need to be productive in the future. So let's see. I want to withhold judgment because you have to see how these things sort through as the pig goes through the snake. To get this to pass in the Senate, you can't afford, the Republicans can't afford to lose more than two senators. We have one senator already saying he's going to vote no. So they can afford to lose one more before they're sunk. Of course, we know McCain had said that the tax package was dead on arrival, so let's assume he's too. They can't afford to lose anybody else. So now the Republicans could get themselves in real trouble here, even if it passes. If you look at corporate taxes, they've come down steadily as a percent of GNP for several decades now, while revenues skyrocketed as a in relationship to GNP. So corporations have been taking over more and more of the economy and paying less and less of the taxes. Also, if you look at the corporate taxes as a percent of the total IRS take, they've also fallen, although not as significantly as a percentage of GNP. But the real power of the comparison is when you look at how their revenues are skyrocketing as a percent of GNP. So we've been, you have a giant sucking sound of profits and revenues into giant corporations, very much served by government and government criminality, sort of engineered to do that. It's privatization on the just do it method. And so for corporations to have to pay less and less taxes when their externalities are greater and greater and they're commanding a bigger and bigger share of the economy is a pretty risky thing. Now, one of the reasons the Republicans are doing it is they want to bring a tremendous amount of capital into the country and rebuild the industrial plant. And if you're going to do it fast, and do it on a highly centralized basis, then you need the corporations to do it for you. The problem is we've decimated the small business economy, and we continue to do so. And if we don't address that, then nothing is ever going to work. The fortune chart that I've described several times in this Larry report, and I show in the speech I gave at the Nexus conference on cryptocurrencies, says it all. You have Fortune 500 revenues tracking with the GNP from 1955 to 1995, and so they kind of rise at approximately the same rate as the GNP. And then suddenly in 1996, they take off and skyrocket relative to the GNP until 2017, to 2016-17 when they start to sort of bump down. What it means is they've increased enough between 95 and 2017 to have increased for the whole period, 55 from to 2016, by 8,500, more than double the GNP, which increased by 4,500%. Of course, both of those percentages show you how much the currency was debased in the meantime. But the reality is you're basically, you've got a giant sucking sound of all economic value activity into publicly traded corporations. And that's been the stock market game. That's why I wrote the Dylan Reed and the stock proc the Aristocracy of Stock Profits book, was to show you sort of how government greases that game. Government does things that make the stock market go up, and then political contributions are financed with the capital gains. So the Republicans are trying to reduce the taxes to keep the game going, because that's about the only way to keep the game going right now. Now the question is, if they do that to suck back all this capital into the United States and try and rebuild the productivity and rebuild the manufacturing base and the industrial base in the U.S., including as a platform to go into space in a very big way, the question is, will that capital go to growth and increase in productivity, or will it just be more financial engineering? It was very sort of unnerving. Gary Cohn was speaking with a group of CEOs and asked the question, who was going to use the money, or the moderator asked the question, who was going to use the money for things that would produce growth, and almost nobody raised their hands, and you should have seen Cohn's face. But a perfect example of this dynamic is, look at all the big mergers we're watching. Hasbro bid for Mattel, Emerson Electric for Rockwell Automation, AT&T fighting to protect its deal with Time Warner, Broadcom bidding for Qualcomm, Comcast and other suitors sniffing around Fox. Looks like Fox is in play. So what you have is people sort of buying mature operations as opposed to trying to start anything new. So whether it's a stock buyback or mergers, it's not a good sign. And of course, we know manufacturing, industrial, we're putting tremendous investment into AI and robotics. So even though we keep hearing that employment is good as for anybody who's good at sort of doing the 3.0 activities. If you're not positioned for 3.0, there are no opportunities for you. So if you combine what's going to happen to the replacement of labor with AI and robotics and the pressure it's going to put on income to labor, and then you load on things that make life even tougher for young people, such as removing the student loan interest exemption. How's that supposed to work? Because remember, young people are a very important component of what makes money for corporations. So if they can get lots of young people cheap, which they certainly can, if you continue to make getting a great education more and more expensive, and you take away the interest and other deductions that young people need. But let's wait and see how this thing how the sausage looks when it comes out of the next part of the sausage factory. In the first week of December, Patty Kemmerer will be joining me for year-end tax planning in 2017. And one of the things we're going to focus on is what looks like it may be coming down the pike when we record that on December 5th, and what it means to you and your tax planning. So we'll be addressing the individual pieces of this package that may affect any of our subscribers. It's a very good quote from Peggy Noonan in one of her latest editorials about sort of watching what's going on in Washington, particularly after the election. And she made some very cogent points. I wanted to read them to you. She's referring to the Republicans and Democrats. The parties are each in an existential crisis. The Democrats split between the Sanders-Warren progressive vision and the old Clinton vision will fight more passionately among themselves as 2020 approaches. The Republicans are left knowing that day by day, Mr. Trump is crashing. The wiser of them suspect that when he's gone, what replaces him is nothing, because the Republican Party is riven and no one knows what it stands for anymore. In both parties, there is too much distance between the top and the bottom, and both ambivalent leaders are chasing after voters they no longer understand. Those are very wise words. It's not clear to me that Trump's support is crashing. I think he may be a bit stronger than Noonan suspects, but suffice it to say, I think there are so many problems that are not transparent or not being addressed. The system literally cannot function with this much lack of transparency and this much opaqueness. Now, the system thinks it can with sufficient force and mind control technology. That's one of the reasons we focused on Control 101 in the third quarter wrap-up. I just don't believe it's going to work, but it certainly has the capacity to make things both weirder and more gruesome. The regulators are now out to get Google. One of the things that is happening, we're seeing a very significant backlash against Silicon Valley and the tech industry. We had the EU slap Google with a major fine, but now you see the state regulators going against them. One quote from the newspaper, Mahaney said several unnamed venture capitalists in Silicon Valley CEOs see antitrust as a significant issue for the big tech companies in the future. He said a venture capitalist he spoke with suggested that an antitrust action against Google may be the first successful bipartisan act in the U.S. in 10 years. Yes, and that is one of the advantages of not having Clinton win the election, because Google was basically going to be running Washington if the Clintonistas had gotten in. Another thing that happened is Zuckerberg's little presidential exploration trip around the United States is not going so well, and there's been some funny comments about it. But what you see is the Silicon Valley is so out of touch, even more out of touch than the leading Republicans and Democrats. And so, in my opinion, the tech blowback has only begun and has the potential to get much, much stronger. Oil and gas changing. We now see the Norway Sovereign Wealth Fund come out and say it's thinking about dropping oil and gas investments because it has enough exposure. Of course, the wealth fund was built with a percentage of Norway's sales of oil. Norway is very oil rich. But it just goes to show you that they're positioning themselves for a world where oil and gas becomes much less important, or a world where we're transitioning more and more to other energy technologies. I thought that was interesting. And then I mentioned last week, but I think it's very important, the industry association announcing that oil and gas production in the United States continues to improve, that we're going to be a major exporter, and the U.S. taking the lead role in the oil and gas industry. It's one of the reasons I think that the Middle East politics are changing so much. Speaking of which, Saudi Arabia has now rounded up more than 200 princes, ministers, and businessmen. In fact, so many have been quote-unquote jailed in the Ritz-Carlton that they have now they have now commandeered the Marriott to house the overflow. And the crown prince is now it's called freedom deals. Give up 70% of your fortune and you can go free. The Economist noted that for a young man, he's building quite a long list of enemies, and it's true. If you look at his position, I empathize. If you're trying to rebuild the economy and push the country forward in a world where oil and gas does not give you the same rich cash flow that it did, you need the capital, and you need the capital to be deployed in an economic way, and you don't have time to deal with big egos. So it I can understand why it's happening, and it very much reflects a desire to clean out the swamp here. Who knows how it will go? We'll just have to see. Sex is a political weapon. The use of sex as a political weapon is off the charts. And just hold on to your pants because it's going to get much worse, I think. So we have groping stories: George Bush groping, Al Franken groping, this guy groping, or people doing things with teenage girls. Basically, all of the stuff we're seeing so far is not focused on the really serious problem. I got really frustrated this week because there is a real effort to bury Judge Moore in Alabama, and so Glory Allred, who always, whenever she shows up, my hackles go up. She's an attorney who does a lot of sexual harassment out in California. Anyway, so she showed up with another quote unquote harassment victim who, crying the whole time, explained why Judge Moore had made a very aggressive pass at her when she was 40 years ago. And she fought him off, and he accepted no and backed off. And suddenly, this is as horrible as running pedophilia rings. So I got so sick of it, I decided that I would donate to Judge Moore. So I gave him $25, because the whole tenor and approach is so non-adult and I don't know. It's again, you're trying to have a political fight without pointing out the real power lines and the real issues, and you're trying to avoid talking about the real power and money issues. And I for one am sick of it. And the day we really want change is the day when the audience says, you know something, we're adults. We want to hear about the power and money. We don't care about all this stuff. Forget it. I'm not saying character issues aren't important, and I don't know what the truth is on Judge Moore. But here's the reality. I worked for a cabinet secretary who I believed was a pedophile. I worked for a president who I believed was a pedophile, or certainly protected and promoted pedophilia rings. If you have any questions about that, listen to my Solari report with John Rappaport on pedophilia. And I did another interview on the Franklin cover-up with Nick Bryan. It's in the archives. But we have serious problems in terms of slavery and sex slavery in this country, and they need to be dealt with. And so it's very irritating to watch all the groping stories. It's almost groping is really sort of a way to avoid the real issues, although I'm not saying real issues don't come up here. But I care a lot more about kids than I do about some of the crazy stuff we're hearing. Interestingly enough, the one positive development out of all of this is that I'm hearing more and more people come forward and understand that pedophilia is a serious problem and it needs to be discussed. And that's a good sign because I've spent a lifetime with it not being socially acceptable to point out that it's a problem or discuss that it's a problem. And I think getting us to the point where we can start to deal with it and face it is very, very important. So I want to get down to dealing with the real issues, and so a lot of this stuff is minor incidents, but everybody is going to find out what their imperfection was. So just get ready for more of this. Transhumanism. Joseph Farrell has written and talked about transhumanism for a long time. Daniel Estulin has a great book on transhumanism. Transhumanism is part of leading us into a world that is not human, that is inhuman, and frankly evil. But it's a way of looking at a human being as though they're a natural resource to be created and molded, not an individual who's sanctified, whose characteristics are defined by nature, not something invented by some biotech machine. And we're seeing a lot of things being done to change the model from the model of what is envisioned in the Bill of Rights and the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, or the sort of Anglo common law into something else. I just noticed this week, new report, DoD backs first service member sex reassignment surgery. Now, so yet again, the military is getting dragged in to help create this new model, which is unfortunate. Speaking of inflation, a Da Vinci painting of Christ purchased for $13,000 in 2005 and restored and authenticated by a group of art dealers just sold for $450 million at Christie. I'm having the video put up on the website, The Buyer's Secret, although I suspect it's going to be hard to keep that secret for too long, so wouldn't surprise me if we find out who it is. But it says a lot about the real rate of inflation, and frankly, as money is repatriated back to the United States, one way or another, I think the administration will be successful at engineering that. Expect inflation to increase. We're all going to be dealing, as the money that's been bubbled and floating around in this financial coup and securities game, it's going to come back and get reinvested in real things, and again, inflation is going to be with us. Not that it hasn't been with us, but it can, the rate can increase. Las Vegas, I just want to point out, I put up a story, 7 survivors are now dead in what I would consider suspicious deaths. The potential story and connections on Las Vegas just keep getting deeper and deeper. I'm not going to spend any time going down the rabbit hole on this, on the Solari report, but I'm hoping someone is willing to dig in and figure it out. It wouldn't surprise me if somebody does. The connections to what's going on in Saudi Arabia look to be potentially significant, which makes it even more interesting. There's quite a story here, but it's going to take insider information or thousands of hours to figure it out. So I'm going to keep an eye on that. And of course, on the what happened in what I now want to call Silicon Valley North in California to clear hundreds and hundreds of thousands of acres for what I suspect is a building out of Silicon Valley to the north.